They want justice. They want answers.
What stands out to you about his personality?
What's the family want most of all?
But you were just the last person to see her.
Get
there's
out of my
an arrest
yard
warrant.
In Lee.
You have a lot of weighty accusations.
Matt Murphy is a former prosecutor and the author of the Book of Murder. He has also prosecuted many death penalty cases. Matt, I wanted to ask you about Tyler Robinson. He is now charged with aggravated murder. What qualifies someone for a death penalty case?
So aggravated murder in the state of Utah is very similar to what would be known as a special circumstance murder in California. And essentially, it's the same language. It basically means a murder, but for lack of a better term, with some sort of spice, something added to it. So murder committed during the course of a sexual assault is a special circumstance in California, or an aggravated murder in Utah. You've got murder of an elected official. You have murder done in an especially cruel or atrocious manner. There's a whole litany of special circumstances or aggravated murder circumstances in the state of Utah. I think that what they're going to proceed on here is what's known as a lying in wait. And we've heard that recently in the news because that's what Eric and Lyle Menendez were convicted of. That was their special circumstance that in the state of California gives the sentencing judge two options. Essentially the death penalty if they seek it, or life without possibility of parole. So in this case, it's interesting because lying in wait is, I think that's their only real viable theory. It's important to remember, though, that the federal government has also been looking at this. So Charlie Kirk was not an elected official. He was not a judge or a police officer. It wasn't done in a particularly prolonged manner. It was quick. So there are actually going to be some issues there concerning lying in wait. But I think they probably can satisfy the elements. He climbs up onto a roof. It's certainly premeditated. It's certainly deliberated ahead of time. And I think that that sort of sniper's pose that we all saw on that cell phone video where he's up on that roof will probably qualify as lying in wait. And remember, there's a tremendous amount of evidence that we don't have yet concerning planning, whether other people may or may not have been involved. There's a bunch of stuff that investigators are still, as we do this interview, probably still piecing together. But I think they can probably cross the threshold with the evidence that they have concerning lying in wait.
Now, that's interesting. So the Utah governor, he said before knowing who the shooter was that the state will seek the death penalty, which is currently done by lethal injection or even firing squad. So now that we're starting to learn more, we know this alleged shooter, 22 years old, received a scholarship to college, raised Mormon, no priors, turned himself in. The reason why I'm listing those things is I wonder if backstory plays a role in this decision and if you as a top prosecutor, former, would seek the death penalty if this were your case.
Well, that's a really good question, Melissa. So everything that you just listed is what we would call factors in mitigation. Okay, so the jury will be instructed if they proceed on the death penalty, and I think they're probably going to, on an array of factors. Like in California on death penalty cases, it's things like, were they under the substantial domination of another person? Were they suffering from some sort of mental illness? Were they under the influence of drugs or alcohol at the time they made the decision to kill? There's a whole list of, in California, we call them A through K factors. And at the bottom, K factor is a catch-all provision. And that is essentially any evidence admitted during the course of the trial or the penalty phase that a juror can draw something that ameliorates or mitigates the severity of the crime. Okay, so everything you just named, each one of those things will be considered by the prosecutor who makes the decision. And it was kind of interesting because you're talking about the governor. That's not the prosecutor. Gavin Newsom could come into California and tell me all day long he didn't want me to pursue death on one of my cases, and I would have laughed him out of my office. So I'm not sure how the governor weighs in on that. Now, is this a case that if I was the prosecutor on that, would I seek the death penalty? And also, I should probably say background-wise, I was in the homicide unit for 17 years, and I sat on our committee for 15 of those where we would make a formal recommendation based on the facts of every special circumstance case filed in Orange County. We would review each one of those and make a determination whether or not we believed it was appropriate to seek death or not death. In Orange County, California, for the 15 years I was on the committee, we saw death in less than 4% of the cases where death was on the table. In other words, not all murders, but all special circumstance murders were the ones that we reviewed. So we were very, very selective about it. And look, one of the aggravating factors here is impact on the community. And if this, based on what I know now, and this man is presumed innocent, I've got to say that because I'm a practicing attorney, he is presumed innocent. But if the evidence turns out to be accurate, like I heard the director of the FBI say that they'd already gotten a DNA hit off a towel coming back to this suspect. And apparently I've also heard, and I haven't seen him yet, but I've heard that there was a text exchange between this man and either a roommate or a friend where he's talking about the rifle and wrapping it in a towel. So if that's accurate, this is incredibly damning for the defense. So would I seek the death penalty on this one? I would absolutely seek the death penalty on this case. This was a political murder. It was done apparently right now. It was done to silence somebody who would travel around college campuses and set up a microphone for people to disagree. Charlie Kirk was very well known, not even among, I keep hearing him referred to as a Trump ally, and I suppose they politically aligned, and I know he's been on the stage with them, but really what he spoke for a lot of center-right people and even people in the center. And I'm not taking a political position on this at all. My whole thing is murder, and is murder for the sake of silencing somebody with the long-term goal of influencing public policy. You know, killing people to affect public policy, we have a word for that, and that's called terrorism. And that is literally pretty much the textbook definition of what terrorism is. It's killing somebody for the sake of impacting public policy or making people afraid to do or not do something is the definition in almost every state and federally of what terrorism is. So I think that it's a little bit, I don't think I've ever seen a governor come out and announce a prosecutorial decision like that, especially before you know. At the time that was stated, regardless of how you feel one way or another on this very, very emotional issue, that was felt like a little bit like jumping the gun to me a bit, because they didn't know if this man was suffering from severe schizophrenia, for example, or if, you know, there are many different scenarios where that could have potentially been a mitigated murder. If something came out about Charlie Kirk's background that was horrific, that maybe this guy had a personal grudge, you know, at that point in the investigation, they just didn't know. Now, based on who they arrested, what the circumstances appear to be now, in my opinion, yes, this is an appropriate case for the death penalty. And if I was the prosecutor on this, I would absolutely seek it.
You know, I think we're going to confirm, and a lot will be revealed in coming days, this week, I think, about he was potentially involved in some kind of intimate subculture, some societal influence that ignited and evoked this. And I, you know, I'm not going to focus on the left, the right, the center. I just want to talk about extremism. What do you think leads someone to turn to murdering another rather than this discourse over having political worldviews? Why do you think society is going this way? This is not the first. It won't be the last. What factors lead to extremism such as this?
Well, one of the terms that we keep hearing, Melissa, is we keep hearing this term radicalized. Right, as if it's a meteor strike that comes from outer space. And I've prosecuted 13 different serial killers, and it's a similar question, like what makes them do this? What drives them? What could possibly make somebody go out there and do that? And we all think about Silence of the Lambs, right? We think about Buffalo Bill, that if you actually read Mindhunter, the original book, it was loosely based on a real guy, and he was mentally ill, and he'd been horribly abused as a child, this character, Buffalo Bill, that we all saw in Silence of the Lambs. And so that's kind of one of the quintessential examples we all know of from pop culture. And it was somebody who was essentially tortured into mental illness, and he became this horrific, monstrous killer. In reality, why do serial killers do it? Because they like it. And the term radicalized, the beef I've got with that is it almost removes personal choice and individual will from that. And I think the reality is, why did this man do it? Because he wanted to, because he felt very passionate about this and decided to silence a human being with whom he disagreed. That at the bottom line, that's what we're talking about here. And I've followed this case like many of us have. And we hear a lot of things here. And again, I'm with you. I consider myself very much in the middle. I don't belong to any political party. But for me, murder is like, you would think that we would draw the line in civility at murder. And this was a man who had two kids, whether you agree with them or not. And I'll tell you, one of the most disturbing things I've seen as an American are these videos where people are celebrating murder. And it's not okay. And it's that's a line that I think goes too far. It's one thing to politically disagree.
Well, question society's morality and ethics. Are there, what are the boundaries? Do they have any? No one should be rejoicing in anyone's murder, regardless of one's.
This man was murdered in front of his two kids. And a lot of the people doing it that I've seen online tend to be young, naive, and I'm sorry, stupid. Because they look, one, what we would do every time we had a murder case, number one, there's the human and then there's the humanity. You have to rise above the individual human in your victim, and you have to operate under the guidance of humanity. So when I had victims that were homeless, Melissa, that had had really rough lives, and you meet their families and a lot of them were loved. And it's like you have to rise above the human and treat the case as humanely as you possibly can. So when somebody is a murder victim, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that we had cases with gang members, with bereaved families. You have to get above the human and enter the world of humanity. And the people that are celebrating it have missed that. They missed that memo. And it is disgusting. And we're seeing a backlash. This man was murdered in front of his wife and kids. And people celebrating it, there is, I think there's a line there, and I think they've crossed it. And politically, again, I do not belong to any political party. I am approaching this from dealing with the murder victims' families that cross the political spectrum. Some of them are very liberal. Some of my victims are very conservative. Some of them were very rich. Some of them were homeless. But when you deal with a loved one suffering that apoplectic grief, it doesn't matter. None of that stuff is supposed to matter. Murder is not okay. And it is certainly not a way that we deal with disagreement. And I mean, I don't want to scold here, but the people that are dancing, I can tell you right now, they've never lost a loved one due to violent crime. They've never been in that incredibly dark place where, you know, another where I also keep hearing this referred to as a tragedy. A tragedy is what happens when an old lady gets hit by a bus crossing the street. That's a tragedy. Or somebody is struck by lightning while they're fly fishing in a river. That's a tragedy. This man's life was taken, and it was planned, and it is not okay. It is not okay. And that is, we are seeing an ugliness right now. And, I'm deeply, deeply disturbed at that. And there's people that think it's okay. And I'm here to tell you, this is the worst thing that could happen to America, in my opinion. And it's not even the killing itself. It's the reaction to it. When John Kennedy was assassinated, I don't recall any clips of Republicans rejoicing because he was a Democrat. And when Martin Luther King was assassinated, I don't recall any clips of people dancing in the streets celebrating that. And when James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King, when he assassinated him, he made him 10 times more powerful than he ever was when he was alive. We saw the same thing with John Kennedy. And I'm not religious. We've known each other for a long time, but there's an entire religion called Christianity that arose out of the execution of somebody with whom the powers disagreed. So we kind of have a history of this. I think that the Democrats, if I was a Democrat, I'd be really worried about the midterms right now. But again, I don't do political commentary. I talk about crime. I talk about violent crime. I talk about punishment. Murder is never okay. It is absolutely awful. And I hope the people that that are celebrating do some soul searching, because it's not okay.
I think what I've noticed is in covering some stories such as this is And I think we're going to also see a dissection of social media and some of the groups that he was allegedly in, the gaming group, other subcultures. There seems to be, seemingly he came from a good family, Tyler Robertson. But I think that what we're seeing is when the environmental and social factors amongst young people we're seeing today has such a greater influence and impact than their families or the way they were raised. You're seeing this switch, this kind of split personality in a sense amongst some. And I think that is the issue here, where there was some diversion in his path and the way he was raised. And it ended up being social environments and environmental factors that led to this. And it's a powerful thing. You know, you have a lot of stories that I've covered where you have young girls, they are good children, they are good teens, but then all of a sudden they go into prostitution or they spiral into this path or that path. It's normally something pulling them in, leading them down this path. And again, this isn't really, you know, something I want to sit up and preach, but I've noticed in today's society, there is a social and environmental factor, and maybe even social media and these online subgroups, that are really influencing the minds of young people. And it's a problem. And I think it's a problem for everyone.
Well, we live in a very politically divisive time. And unfortunately, what we've seen over the last 10 years in particular is we have this, I am virtuous, I am good because of the way I vote. And we've seen that part really is on both sides. And I don't want to both sides this thing. And I think that the whataboutism is a fallacy. Like, that's not an answer to this. You know, if this was a Republican who killed, a similar figure on the left, and there are many, it wouldn't be okay for the Republicans to turn around and go, okay, well, what about this? Or what about you guys did that? That's a high school argument. In the national discourse, I think that we've got to get above that. But in my view, this came from, look, he had Antifa slogans on the ammunition, and that has been confirmed. Catch this fascist is, and one of the things that bothers me about this, I got a degree in political science. None of these morons can even define what fascism is. Sorry. And if you're celebrating this, you're a friggin' moron. Find me on Instagram. Let's debate. This is awful. When you go to a postmortem, I've been to about 100 of those where you see the clinical dissection of what was previously a vibrant human being, and you don't forget that. And that's the reality of this. And I think that what we're seeing is this weird ivory tower joining of morality with politics like we've never seen in our lifetime before. And if you were fighting what you perceive as being bad, then it's like you're justified in anything that you do.
Also, people in his surroundings, Tyler Robinson, again, alleged at this point, I think that they need to be aware that more charges could come, more people could be thrown into this if there is confirmation of some of the rumblings that there was chatter online about this beforehand. And isn't it true that some of those people involved in that pre-chatter can also be charged eventually at some point?
There's a concept in the law known as aiding and abetting. And that means if you facilitate, aid, or promote pretty much in any way. So anybody that's cheering them on in this, and I just listened to some really interesting stuff online about, apparently there were some people, I think there was one person even at the FBI, somewhere in the federal government, who had a very cryptic post, like something big is about to happen.
Yes, and, right.
Right. So if anybody who had contact with him that encouraged this in any way, guess what? You may be liable for murder. That's the way that works. The woman who says, hey, honey, go kick his ass when a neighbor, there's a dispute over a fence, and encourages her husband who goes and lays a beating on some guy, she is also responsible equally for that crime. The philosophical underpinnings of that being, of course, maybe without encouragement and support, nobody would do it. Okay. And so people need to be aware of that. Anybody who actually helped, like obtaining firearms or ammunition or providing transportation, anything like that. I mean, you go back to the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and you see, John Wilkes Booth died. He was shot and he died in a barn, essentially. But there were a whole bunch of other people that were arrested and executed after that. Like, study a little bit of history. That law has not changed. You can be a co-conspirator depending on the level of the involvement, but also it doesn't take much. If you aid, facilitate, or promote in any way, that can satisfy the elements for aiding and abetting, which makes you what's known as a principal to the crime. So it has to be more than just knowledge or presence. I should say that. And of course, this man, again, I want to emphasize that he is presumed innocent at this point, and that's really important. But if the evidence actually turns out to be what we've heard so far online, he's in a lot of trouble in the state of Utah. And remember, we still have looming federal charges as well, like we saw with the Mangione case. You know, there's a state case against him, and there are some similarities there. Right. There's a state case against him. There's also a federal case. And New York does not have a death penalty, but the federal government does. There are 27 states in the federal government that still have it. And they've announced that they're going to seek it against him, against Mangione. And, regardless of your feelings on the death penalty, whether that's appropriate or not, that's a discussion for another day and another time. This is, but murder itself, you'd think that we could all agree that murder of a father of two is bad, regardless of what he believed. I believe that. I've prosecuted cases, again, where my victims were wealthy, where my victims were homeless, and everything in between across the political spectrum. And that's, you'd think that as a nation, we could all agree that there's a line there. And that's, I think the line is crossed. I don't think we've seen anything quite like this. This is different than a politician being assassinated, because you can at least make the argument that they're affecting public policy. But I would have gone after the death penalty for Sirhan Sirhan, who killed Bobby Kennedy. And if I was on this case, I'd go after the death penalty on this guy. And I didn't lose any of my DP cases, my death penalty cases. I did 8 of them personally. And in my mind, this one is not a close call. So now I don't know all the evidence. I certainly don't know all the factors of mitigation. Maybe there is something that will come out that would change my mind on that. But based on what I've seen now, they're going to seek it. And my guess is, in the state of Utah, they will get it.
And they have up to 60 days. So we'll know in coming weeks. Is that correct? 60 days.
Yep. So they have time to analyze it. And that's for the reasons that we just discussed. You want the prosecution to have an opportunity to review and evaluate, to properly investigate, review, and properly evaluate all the factors in aggravation, along with all the factors in mitigation. And in California, we even do a thing called a Livesey hearing, where before the decision is made, you will invite the defense team in. After the arraignments happen, after the defense team has been appointed, you give them a period of time to gather, to do their investigation and to gather as much evidence as they can. And then you have a conversation with them where they present that to you. And like I said, more than 96% of the time, we did not seek death in those cases. And yeah. Yeah, it says a lot for this one. This one was awful, and I think we're going to see things reverberating for quite some time on this. But look, I'm not a political guy. I look at this from the perspective of murder and the law, and this is a heinous crime. And regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, and I have plenty of friends who are very much lifelong Democrats who are devoted to kind of the left-leaning side, who are disgusted by what we have seen. And look, if I was a Democrat, I'd be worried about the midterms. This is the type of thing that can affect power. If you're on that side of the aisle, I wouldn't be celebrating this, because this is going to come back and it's going to hurt the Democratic Party, I bet.
So. Well, this is one that the nation and the world will be watching. So thank you again, Matt, as always.
Happy to be here as always.